Hey, Calum's Lions, welcome to church. My name is Chris, lead pastor here. Glad that you're tuning in. Acts chapter 17, you know the drill. We are in the book of Acts all the way to Labor Day in September. Just as you're going there, just want to cast vision for a few things. Number one, we are hiring some positions. We went through COVID with like a skeleton crew of people as positions or contracts were ended. We didn't rehire them. So now we're in a season of hiring. Let me just cast vision for some of them. Custodian assistant, somebody to make sure that this place is beautiful, to welcome people throughout the week and weekends, 24 hours a week. Hospitality coordinator. This is working with our service design team and making our weekends here just magnetic and wonderful and lovely. This person's going to be really creative, a people person, organizer, kind of event planner. So 10 to 12 hours a week, maybe a side gig for you, but something that's really going to be fulfilling for you here in linking arms on our weekend services. Children's ministry coordinator. We need somebody to disciple my kids because I can't do it by myself. My kids are good kids too. You're gonna love them. But more than that, just our ministry. Not just my kids, but our ministry. 15 to 17 hours a week working with Pastor Carlene, our next gen team, in making just amazing, fully devoted followers of Jesus with our kids here. And the technical director, 36 hours a week, full-time gig for you. Come on board, folks. We have a great staff here. It is an amazing place to work. We are certified best Christian workplace. And so please come jump on board, link arms with us in the mission and ministry of KAC. Second thing I want to just kind of cast vision for and see if there's any interest. I love leadership development. I want to do it in a more specific and targeted way. And so there's no like formal program here. There's no brochure that I'm going to give out. I'm just interested to see if there's a small cohort of people that would be interested from September till about April of 2022 for like a leadership incubator. So I'm thinking like studying culture and apologetics and theology and leadership and service here, that at the end of April in 2022, you would leave this whatever program just more equipped, better equipped to serve KAC, the people of KAC, the people of Kamloops. And so I just want to invest more intentionally into that small group of cohort of people. If you're interested in that, can you let me know? If no one's interested and nobody picks up on it, that's fine. But if you are, can you email me, chris@kamloopsalliance.com, and we'll see where it goes from there. All right, Acts chapter 17, an important text, one of my favorite texts in all of the book of Acts. The big idea is how to be a compelling Christian in a skeptical world. How to be a compelling Christian in a skeptical world. In times past, the idea of religion viewed by the kind of the common culture or the common society or the regular society was that religion was a good thing that generally helped society. Even if you weren't a religious person, that people on the outskirts or people in our city would look at religion as something that is good. Now we actually, I think, in our post-Christian, even post-truth culture, people see religion with an elevated sense of skepticism or even hostility or perhaps even apathy. But we are now at a place where religion is seen as actually a barrier to societal's progress. And so how do you and I be compelling in the skeptical, hostile, or even apathetic world? We must model and proclaim a Christianity that is compelling, that is invitational, and is intelligible. Those are such key things for us as we work and live and be in our world. So how do you do that? Well, I'm glad you're here this weekend. How can you be a compelling Christian in a skeptical world? That's what we're going to see as Paul models this beautifully in this chapter. So your Bible's open, Acts chapter 17. The first thing, the first way that you can be a compelling Christian or even an effective Christian in our skeptical world is number one, spiritual care for our city. We see this here in the book of Acts in Acts chapter 17. So verse 16, here's what it says. While Paul was waiting for them, he's waiting for two of his cohorts that he has left behind, and they're going to meet him in Athens. While he was waiting for them, yes, in Athens, this is the city, the place that he is in, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. Before we get that to the idols part, let me just tell you a little bit about Athens, where Paul is right now. As I mentioned to you a few weeks ago, the last chunk of the book of Acts summarizes Paul's three missionary journeys. We catch him here in his second missionary journey. And so let me just show you here on the map where he is. So he started here in the city of Antioch. He goes all the way up through the ancient Mediterranean, Bithynia, down to Troas, to Macedonia, to Berea, to Thessalonica, and then he finds himself here in Athens. Athens itself is one of the major cultural hubs of the ancient Mediterranean world. His second missionary journey is in the late 40s AD or early 50s AD. So Jesus was resurrected in about 33 AD. So this is about 20 years after the resurrection of Jesus. And you can see where the message of Christianity has already expanded. He finds himself here in the ancient city of Athens in the Roman province of here, Achaia. All right. Now, Athens itself was a foremost Greek city-state since the 5th century BC. It was an intellectual metropolis, a cultural metropolis of the world, brilliant architecture. This was the place where culture flowed from. You got to think of a New York City or a London or a Paris or even a Vancouver or a Los Angeles. This is where Paul found himself here in Athens. Now, in Athens, if you were to go there, this is modern day Greece. If you were to go there now, what you would see, and you can still see it to this day, it's a beautiful picture, beautiful place. You would see this ridge, and this ridge is what was called the Acropolis. It was seen for miles around. Paul would have seen it, been beautiful, amazing piece of land and beauty in ancient Athens. Sitting on top of the Acropolis here is something called the Parthenon. One scholar that I read this week said this, that the Parthenon is one of the most visually satisfying buildings to be seen anywhere in the world. Can you imagine Paul showing up here in Athens, a Greek city-state? He's a Jewish person himself, and coming upon the most beautiful city, developed city, intellectual city, cultural city of the ancient world. This is where Paul finds himself. In the middle of all the beauty, in the middle of all of the culture, in the middle of all the philosophical and intellectual deliberation of Athens that flowed from Athens, here's Paul's analysis of Athens. He was, what does it say? Greatly distressed that the city was full of idols, and idols simply are false gods, false gods. He looks around at this beautiful city and sees it is full of false gods. And actually, statistically, it was. Historians would say that the ancient city of Athens probably had around 10,000 people in it. And they say there's about 30,000 idols to the Greek Parthenon, or the Greek pantheon, I should say, of gods. So 10,000 people, 30,000 idols in the city. One ancient thinker said it was easier to find an idol than a person in ancient Athens. Paul was correct in his assessment. The city was full of idols. He's walking down the streets, seeing the Parthenon, seeing all of the beauty, everything, and he sees that it is full of these false gods, these little statues everywhere. And you can see here Paul's concern for the spiritual welfare of the city. That Athens loved their false gods. So if you were to walk around a campus, you go down to Riverside Park, you get some ice cream at Scoops. Not that I've never done that before, that we spend money there. But you go down, there's no idols downtown at Riverside Park. You're not going down probably and seeing, you know, little statues of little gods. But our city might not be full of seen idols, but it is, friends, it is full of unseen idols, unseen things. And as you live and as you move around in Kalamps, you can see these idols, that our city is full of beauty. But friends, if you want to be an effective or compelling Christian in a skeptical world, you have to see our city through a spiritual lens. It's not just beautiful, but it is a spiritual needy place. One of the things that I wanted to learn when I first got here a few years ago, 3 years ago, was what are the kind of the cultural idols of our city? So I took out local pastors, talked to leaders within KAC here, and I said, well, what are the false gods, or what are the idols of our city? And most people said, the idol of Kamloops is recreation. It's going out with the RV, with the trailer, with the boat, putting your feet up and recreating or recreating yourself. It's the fishing trips, it's the ATVs, it's the outdoor stuff that people prize more than anything. And so in this way, we have to broaden our definition of sin, because sometimes we just think of sin as, oh, it's all the bad, dirty, gross things that you do. But no, an idol, friends, an idol is a good thing that is made ultimate. It's a good thing that's made ultimate. So is there anything wrong with going out with your trailer, buying an ATV, enjoying hunting, fishing? Absolutely not. But if it is ultimate, if it takes the place of joy and worship in your life, then it is a false god. Those are the unseen things of our city. More so, if you drive down downtown, you see all of the idols of drugs and sex and trafficking and all of these things. Like, we need to go and look at our city through spiritual lenses. As Paul saw Athens, it was beautiful, but it was void of truth. We need to see our city in the same way, that it is needy and spiritually lost. Do you care about that? Does it wreck you like it did Paul? He was greatly distressed to see that this city, full 10,000 image bearers of God in Athens, and they were worshiping idols. Does it distress you to see our city, 100,000 people, 100,000 image bearers of God worshiping idols in the same way? Man, this confronts the way that we view ourselves and our place in our city. So a question that you have to ask yourself is this: are you here to take from our city, or are you here to give to our city? Most people, oh, why did you move to Kamloops? Oh, I moved because of the lifestyle. Man, enjoy it. It's a great place. Put up your feet, go wake surfing on Shuswap Lake, do it, love it, but give back. As followers of Jesus, how to be a compelling Christian is skeptical. We need to see that our city is full of idols. So that's the first one. The second one is, the next step. If you want to take a next step, how do you do that? There's a great resource online. It's called The Art of Neighboring. It was a book that was released. It tells you how to love your neighbors. Go online and check out The Art of Neighboring. Okay, number two, how to be a compelling Christian in a skeptical world. Be involved with people who do not believe. And this is where we see Paul. So verse 17, he reasoned in the synagogue with both Jews and God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace day by day. What's Paul doing? Shows up in Athens, sees that it's full of idols, and he plants himself there. He talks with Jews. He talks with Greeks. He talks in the synagogue. He talks in the marketplace. And he does it day by day. This is the normal routine that Paul has while he's in the city. He's involved with people that don't believe the same things that he does. Then it says in verse 18, a group of Epicurean, that's the first one, and Stoic philosophers began to debate with him. Some of them asked, what is this babbler trying to say? The word babbler here actually is the idea of like a bird picking up seeds and spitting them out. He's picking up seeds and spitting them out. In other words, these intellectual elites of Athens look at Paul and basically say, you're a moron. Do you even know what you're saying? So he's not met with warmth and cuddles and, oh my goodness, this is amazing. No, he's actually met with some derision. Paul finds himself in Athens, talking to the everyday people and also hear the intellectual elite. Let me tell you a little bit about these Epicurean and Stoic philosophers, just very, very, very briefly. The Epicurean philosophers, it was found by somebody called Epicurus. He died in 270 BC. This school of thought, these people were tranquil and undisturbed. They were agnostic secularists. And you're like, what does that mean? Agnostic basically means they didn't believe that there was a God. If there was a God, he wasn't active in the world. And they were secular. They kind of just indulged in the culture of the day. An ancient thinker, Diogenes, said about the Epicureans, he summed up their philosophy by saying, there's nothing to fear in God, nothing to feel in death. Good, the ultimate good for the Epicureans, was pleasure can be attained, and evil, the bad of life, can be endured. These are the Epicureans. The Stoic philosophers, These people were founded by a movement in 265 BC, and this was a dominant philosophical school of ancient Athens, where Paul was. The good for these people was virtue, and the bad was vice. And what they wanted as Stoics, which is a term that we use today, was to not be disappointed. The more expectations you have, the more you're disappointed. So their whole outlook on life was to live without passion, was to not let things get you down, to live with a stiff upper lip. They were proud, self-sufficient, pantheistic, which means they believe that there is divine in everything. There's divine in me, there's divine in the trees, there's divine in the clouds, there's divine in you. They're pantheistic and fatalistic, that everything was determined beforehand. So it probably doesn't matter to you what the Epicureans and Stoics thought, but here's the point. Everybody in ancient Athens, like these people, were trying to make sense of life. We're trying to make sense of their life. Who am I? What is this world all about? What is the good of life? What is the bad of life? How do I suffer well? What is the end of all these things? Every single person, whether you're in ancient Athens or in 2021 in Kamloops, we're all trying to make sense of this life. We're all trying to do it. Paul says in verse 18, others remarked about these intellectual elite, he seems to be advocating foreign gods. They've never heard the gospel before. That's what he's saying. They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. Yes, even to intellectual elites, Paul is talking about Jesus. As we see here, how do you be a compelling Christian in a skeptical world? Be involved in the lives of people who do not believe, who have never heard the gospel. In 2013, the Center for Global Christianity, which is out of Gordon-Conwell Seminary on the eastern seaboard of the United States. This was in 2013, so it's a little dated, but I think it still holds true. They did some studies, and what they found is that 20% of non-Christians, 20% of non-Christians do not know a practicing Christian. One in five non-Christian people don't even know a person who follows Jesus Christ. This is problematic. This is hugely problematic. How are they ever going to know? What they know of Christians is from the media or from their growing up years or whatever. They actually don't know somebody who believes in Jesus. And so, in our culture, I get it. The temptation for me as a father of three kids who follows Jesus, loves Jesus, the temptation is to hunker down. The temptation is to hibernate. The temptation is to pack everything and move to some country where the women still wear skirts down to their ankles and, you know, just completely go back in time. We take, you know, the DeLorean from Back to the Future and we reverse because we just want to hunker down because the culture is so scary. I get that temptation. It is very real to me. And yet, the call of Jesus for the church, which is you and me, is to go make disciples of all nations. Whether it's in the 50s or whether it's in the 2020s, to go and make disciples, that we pursue Jesus, listen to me, not just for our own intellectual stimulus or our own joy, we pursue Jesus for the sake of others, for the sake of people who do not yet know Jesus. And so, why do you have the neighbors that you have? Why do you have the dentist that you have? Why do you have the massage therapist or the chiropractor that you have? Why do you have the team members that you have? I cannot be where you are and you cannot be where I am. The call of Jesus for you and I in our time is not to retreat from the world, but to engage it well, to think clearly about our times. Why? Because everybody is trying to figure out their life. Everybody is. Even the most ardent atheist, the person says there is no God, I don't care. Even that person is trying to figure out their life. And if you and I know Jesus and follow his teaching and experience his resurrection life and have hope in the midst of difficulties and have a joy that even a wildfire cannot take from us, then we have to share it boldly. People are trying to figure out how do they parent their teenager? How do they go through their cancer? How do they make sense of the loss of a loved one? How do they make sense of the fear and anxiety? How do they make sense of the fact that they have anger or an addiction that they can't change? Folks, if Jesus Christ is who he says he is, you and I, we have to be involved in the lives of people who do not know Jesus. We have to be caring and loving and interested and gentle and appropriate, not seeing people as projects, but loving them for who they are, regardless of what worldview they hold, regardless of their hostility towards Christianity or you. We have to be those people. How do you be a compelling Christian in a skeptical world? We need to be involved in the lives of people who do not believe, because here Paul is in Athens preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. Man, may it be so for us. So the next step for us here is to practice faithful presence, where be faithful to Jesus where he has put you, simply put. Okay, number three, how to be a compelling Christian in a skeptical world? I'm glad you asked. Number three, cultural discerner instead of cultural consumer. Yes, here is Paul at work again. Verse 19, they took him and brought him to the meeting of the Areopagus. This was kind of like the city council-ish of Athens. Things of morality, public policy, crimes would come to this council, and they would hear in a formal way the happenings of Athens. And so Paul is brought to the Areopagus. This was kind of like the Juilliard School of Music. This was the highest meeting of some of the most intellectual, powerful minds of the ancient world. Paul is brought into it. It's like going from Flin Flon, Manitoba to New York City, all right? This is what's happened to Paul. If you're from Flin Flon, we love you. But I mean, Flin Flon, you gotta admit, it's a little bit out in the sticks. If you're there, love Manitobans, if you're tuning in, love you. Anyway, Areopagus, where they said to him, may we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting? They've never heard the gospel. You are bringing some strange ideas to our ears, and we would like to know what they mean. We want more, Paul. And then here's Luke's comment in verse 21. All the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there spent their time doing nothing but talking about and listening to the latest ideas. Man, isn't that our culture? Lots of idea sharing, not a lot of processing in our culture. And so Luke here is kind of putting that insight in, which is awesome. Then verse 22, Paul then stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus and said, here he is, a formal hearing. Paul gets invited into this. I love this. He says, people of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. I see. Ooh. I have discerned. I have looked at the city through a spiritual lens. I haven't just consumed everything. I've discerned it. To discern is literally to weigh. I have weighed this city. I have processed and reflected on this. And I've seen that you are very religious. There's 30,000 idols in your city. Then verse 23, for as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, he's discerning, weighing, even found an altar with this inscription, to an unknown God. There's 30,000 gods. The Athenian said, well, what if there's one that we've missed? Oh no! So let's put an inscription on it, to an unknown God. And if there's anyone that we may have missed in the pantheon of gods that we worship, at least we got it covered. All right. So it's kind of like, here's all the gods et al and others that may be there. So then Paul says to them in the Areopagus, so you are ignorant of the very thing you worship. You don't even know. And this is what I'm going to proclaim to you. See what he's doing? He's engaging gently with the culture. He sees these idols and he says, you think you're missing one. And he says, you are missing one. Let me tell you a little bit about him. That's what he's doing here in Acts chapter 17. To the unknown God, Paul's saying, you have missed one, and let me tell you about him. He's being confrontational, but in a gentle way. He diagnoses the culture spiritually instead of consuming it like everybody else. The book of Colossians, another letter that Paul wrote, he didn't write Acts, but he's the main figure here. In Colossians 2, verse 8, Paul writes this to another ancient church in the ancient world. Listen to what he says. See to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy, which depends on human tradition and the elemental spiritual forces of this world rather than Christ. See what he's saying? He's saying this. See to it that you are not held captive by the ideas of the prevailing culture that you live in, rather than on Jesus. Paul here is doing exactly what he says in Colossians 2. He's, I'm not going to be held captive by these floating ideas that you have. You want to be worshiping people. You want to be religious people. Let me tell you about the God that I serve. The God who is not an idol is what he is saying. If we want to be compelling, effective Christians in a skeptical world, we need to be a cultural discerner like Paul is being here rather than a cultural consumer. So for us in our culture, one of the major ways that you and I are formed today is the use of technology and screens. That we are more shaped by the screen time, the entertainment that we consume, rather than the scriptures. And it's just true. It's true for me too. It can be true for me as well as it can be true for you as well. Just a cursory glance on Google. Cursory, didn't do deep dive into this, but what I saw is that the average person in North America, United States, and Canada spends anywhere between 2 to 2.5 hours on social media a day. That's just social media. It's safe to say that we are living in an age of digital addiction, where everything is focused on the internet. I mean, even today, the internet cut out here at the church, and I was like, I don't know what to do anymore because everything has to do with the internet and screens. It's just the world that we live in, all right? It's a neutral thing, but used in the way that we are using it now, I think this dramatically changes us. So Sherry Turkle, she's a professor at MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. She just wrote a book recently called Reclaiming Conversation. In this book, she says that increased time on social media correlates to a measurable loss of empathy. See what she's saying? That the more time that you spend on social media, the less able you are to have empathy, to sit in somebody else's world, to think the way that they are thinking in real life. Like, this is dramatically changing our lives. This social media is changing the way that we form beliefs as well. We know, you know, that there is an algorithm on social media that creates an echo chamber of what you want to hear. So what's in that echo chamber is the culture, the secular culture's views about happiness and sexuality and what is good and what is true and personal fulfillment, a theology of what it means to be a human being. We are being formed so deeply and so effectively by the culture, this digital culture that we live in. Am I against it? No, but we have to be aware of how it's forming us. It also changes the depth of our beliefs as well. People are calling it now thinly held beliefs. These are beliefs that we see online, see on social media, in our own echo chambers, and we pick them up. Oh, this suits me. This is a cause that I can get behind. And then about a week later, it doesn't matter anymore. It's left the news cycle. I don't have to care. Then we pick up another thing and we're the champion of this. And we like the likes that we get when we champion this one cause or this one idea. And then we put it down and we pick it up and we put it down and we are in flux with our identity and the beliefs that we have. And this is changing all of us. And so in our culture, how do you be a cultural discerner and not a cultural consumer? There's a book written recently called The Wisdom Period. It's by a guy named Brett McCracken, and he talks about the wisdom pyramid. And here's what he says. If you want to be a discerner, not a consumer, he says, you need to build your life on the scriptures. I'm talking to people here who follow Jesus. You need to build your life on the scriptures. The next level up here is your local church, where there's embodied rhythms of worship, wise people in a physical space that you can talk to, that you can disagree with, that you can bring your doubts into, proximity physically, natural, time-tested theology, wise people in Christian history, continuity. It's within the church where you can learn about, well, how have people in the past talked about things like social justice and pandemics and theology? How has the historical church thought about these things? It's in this place, being involved here. Then the next level up, he talks about nature and beauty, going outside and experiencing general revelation. The next thing he talks about is books. C.S. Lewis said, Like it says here, read more old books than new. Read all of these things, inform yourself. Then the next one up is the internet. Google and Wikipedia only as needed. Prioritize content recommended by wise people. If you're just consuming every other video that YouTube is recommending to you, it's not gonna be helpful to you. Finally, at the top here is social media. He says, use it sparingly. Too much is bad for your overall health. And this is actually legitimately coming out in more and more studies that the more that you consume, the worse off you are. So here's what McCracken says. You need to build this way up. The problem is, I think most people this day build that way. And if you and I want to be effective followers of Jesus, this will not do. This way will not do. We have to be people of the book. We have to be people of scripture. So what's your next step? Less screen time and more Bible. That's it. Less screen time, more Bible. If you want to be a cultural discerner instead of a cultural consumer. Okay, last point, last idea. How do you do this? Well, what Paul ends up doing here is he ends up telling the Areopagus what God is like. So he's discerned. He cares for the city. He's involved with people who don't believe the same thing that he does. And now he tells them with his words about this God. It's verse 24. It says, the God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth and does not live in temples made by human hands. You see what he's doing here? He says, God is not an idol. The God that I know, the one that you have forgotten, the one that you have ignored, he is not an idol. He's not built by human hands. Who is he? He is the creator of all things. So this is really good for our indigenous friends too, who are tuning in this weekend. Because indigenous spirituality is about the creator. Look, the God of the Bible comes and says, here is the creator. Here is who he is. And the Bible tells us who the creator is. He's the one who's made the world and everything in it. He's the Lord of heaven and earth. That you cannot limit or localize this God. That he creates out of love and for love. And so in our naturalistic, skeptical, secular culture that believes at the core, maybe not express belief, but at the core, that life is meaningless. No. The God that Paul knows, the God that I know, is that God is creator and your life has purpose. It starts with purpose and it ends with purpose, that you are purposed to know and be in relationship with the creator. This is what Paul is saying. Then he goes on. And he is not served by human hands as if he needed anything, like your idols need tending to, is what he's saying. Rather, he himself gives everyone life and breath and everything else. This is a theological concept, the character attribute of God, that God has aseity, that he has life in himself, that he is life and he gives life to every single person. Every single person, he has life in himself, that he is the source of life, not in the idols that you worship, not in recreation, not in your looks, not in anything, that he is the one that can give you the life that you're searching for. From one man, he made all the nations that they should inhabit the whole earth, and he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their land, that he is the ruler over all things. He is sovereign over all things. Verse 27, God did this so that they would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him. What he's saying to these Athenians is that God can be known. He's not a mystery. He's not to the unknown God, that he has shown himself in the person of Jesus Christ. If you want to know what God is like according to Christianity, look at Jesus. And one of the things I love about interacting with people who are new to the faith, who have met Jesus and given their life as he has given his life for them, I love them understanding this idea that they can know God. That they can be in relationship with God, that he can speak to them, that he loves them, and the life that gives to them, man, that he is a knowable God. Verse 28, for in him we live and move and have our being, as some of our own poets have said, we are his offspring, that we are made by him and for him. Then He talks about that we are his offspring, that God is a good father. He's bringing attributes to this God that they don't know. That we are his offspring. We should not think that the divine being is like gold or silver or stone, like your little puny idols here, an image made by human design and skill. He says, in the past, God overlooked such ignorance, but now he commands all people everywhere to repent. This is like the crux of the sermon. If this is who the God is, if he is creator, if he has made you, if he is ruler and he is sovereign, if he is father and he loves you, then everywhere, everybody needs to turn their attention from the idols that they're worshiping onto the real and living God. Why? It says, for he has set a day where he will judge the world, that God is a judge. With justice by the man he has appointed. This is Jesus. He has given proof to this to everyone by raising him, Jesus, from the dead. Paul points to the resurrection and says, look at the resurrection. Start at the resurrection. If Jesus is alive from the dead, that he is Lord over all of these idols, and you have to stop ignoring him. He's saying this in the Areopagus to some of the most intellectually elite people of the ancient world. You have to repent. Why? Because if Jesus is who he says he is, Paul is convinced of it, and so am I, we have to be telling about him. We need to be tellers. Wisely, gently, appropriately. If you are a person of the scriptures, you have lots to talk about. And you share your story and you share your life. You tell them, this is who the God I know is, and this is how he has provided me, and this is how he's healed me, or this is how he was present with me in the middle. You just speak those stories out. So your next step here is you need to ask the people in your life, what do you think Christians believe? What do you think Christians believe? And just listen. And oftentimes when I've asked that question, I get to say to them, you know what? I don't believe in that God either. Let me tell you about the God that I believe in. Like Paul did here. Let me tell you about him. Let me tell you about him. This is the opportunity. And then, friends, do you want to come to church with me? Because there's something about being here that they can't get anywhere else. The presence of God in and amongst people is beautiful. How do you be a compelling Christian in a skeptical world? Well, what have we seen? The first thing is spiritual care for our city, that he is distressed over idols. The second thing, involved in people's lives who don't believe. The third thing, to be a cultural discerner instead of a cultural consumer. And fourthly, telling people about what God is like. Tell about who Jesus is to you. What can you expect? Well, here's what happened to Paul. In verse 32 and 33 of this text in Acts, you can see there's three responses. Some people mocked in verse 32. Some people wanted more. Some people just sneered at him. Oh, this is ridiculous. Go on with you. Other people said, I actually want to hear a little bit more. And other people were moved. Other people were moved. It mentions two people's names in the Areopagus who said, I'm in. As you are on mission for the sake of Jesus, for the sake of others in our city, you're going to get these, some people will mock you. Some people say, hey, tell me a little bit more. And some people will be moved because Jesus is calling men and women to himself. We have been praying. I've been praying for a move of God in our city because we need it. 3% of people in our city would consider themselves Bible-believing, Jesus-loving, on-mission people. 3% of 100,000, not a lot of people. We are praying for a move of God. Well, how does that happen? It happens because you and I commit to being compelling Christians in a skeptical world who do not retreat, who are involved, loving, caring, listening in the lives of people that God has placed in front of you, being faithfully present to them, being a loving neighbor in your neighborhood. This is the call of KAC. Would you be a contributing member to what God's calling our church to be, on mission for his name and his glory in our city? That you would interact with, pray for, and be involved in any way that he calls you. We are moved, as people were here, we are moved towards Jesus because he first moved towards us. And may our church play a small role in the restoration of our city. Thanks for tuning in. Love you lots.